to minute 22 of season 10 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we hijack our way through the 1974 thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Richard Kirkham, the Shepherd of the Lambcast. Welcome
back everybody.
To the show, Richard.
Thanks for having me back, Rob. Looking forward to the rest of the week.
Yeah, me too. Always a pleasure talking to you. Especially about older movies like this one. Minute 22 begins with Blue continuing to move the hostages and ends with a woman being disappointed. So we ended things yesterday with Green informing Blue that the power has been turned off, and then Blue starts telling everyone that they should go to the front part of the car, that they should move to go to the back, and then he reiterates it at the beginning of this minute, and he goes, everybody in the front part of the car, move to the back. And the all of these future hostages are a little bit shocked as to what's going on. Now, we talked a little bit about this character, the old man, played by Michael Gorin. Now, when he starts moving, do you see that look on his face?
Yes.
It makes me think, and again, I could be wrong, but this being, an older man in the 70s, that maybe it's bringing back memories of something that might have happened to him 30 years earlier overseas,
He's clearly a Jewish stereotype here. Yes. And so we're supposed to recognize that, and maybe he sees a little bit of that authoritarianness. Yeah. Being applied here, and sees parallels to what happened in an earlier time. I could see how you could make that connection pretty easily, although I think a lot of older people would probably just have that kind of reaction, who are you and why are you bossing me around, and I don't like being told what to do, and that look of disdain, and not quite anger, but certainly one that's like hard to accept. I think that'd be pretty typical.
Okay. That's a fair assessment also. For me, I've seen this movie dozens of times over the years, and this is, when I was doing the research for these particular minutes, this is the first time that I actually noticed this. And for me, it just jumped out. Yeah. That just look on his face. But I think what you said also could be plausible, reasoning for it. Well, obviously there's no way of ever knowing what is really going through this actor's mind. And I think both scenarios are plausible and a possibility. I just looked at it from the perspective that, here he's being herded to the right side of a train, and maybe that's what, maybe. But like you said, it could be either. So
I don't know if anybody has mentioned it before in a previous episode. I'm a little confused about the geography in this sequence, because they're moving them to the front of the train.
No, they're moving them to the back.
Well, that's what I mean. They're moving them to the back of the train, but aren't Green and Blue already at the back of the train?
No, they're at the front. They're in the front.
But that's where that's where he had to go back and... like I said, I'm trying to figure out, because they have the thing with the other train cars that they left behind, and I'm trying to figure out which direction they're traveling from when he goes to turn off the power in the tunnel.
Okay. All right. Do you want me
to... he'd have to be going forward.
We haven't gotten to the point where he's turning off the power yet. That's a little bit later in the week. But here, what we saw last week is that he uncoupled the two trains. And then he got up into the back end of the front car, and then he went all the way to the front, where Danny Doyle is in the engineer's.
Right, he's at the front of the car, for sure. Right.
Exactly. Later in the week, when we see how how he's going into the into the power, then we'll see how the geography is there. But from now, it actually makes sense of where he is.
And we do see the locked cabin of the control room of the of that train.
Yes.
Right there behind them. So I'm assuming that's the front of the car, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And then one of the other passengers said, "What the hell is going on?" And you see, one of the problems that I have with this movie is it's really hard to figure out who some of these actors are that are playing these small little roles on the train.
Well, when they get the credits, they all give them, you know, stereotypical names. There's the
Because
hippie
well,
and
that's the
the
thing, the stereotypical
wasp and
names.
the pimp and.
Exactly. Well, the pimp, I know who he is, and we'll talk about him later this week because you know, we actually know who he is.
Right.
But I'm thinking, and again, I could be wrong, that this could be the delivery boy, who was played by an actor named Alex Colon, or Colon, Colon, because looking at the picture of him on IMDb, even though he has a mustache, it could very well be the same guy. I don't know though. It's very difficult to know for sure. But if it is Alex Colon, so he was born in 1941 and passed away in 1995 at the age of 53. He was in maybe he has 53 movie credits on IMDb. And you know, in this movie, he was in a Chuck Norris movie, Invasion USA, which there's a picture of him and Chuck Norris on the on IMDb. But again, I'm guessing that this is him, but I could be wrong. If anyone out there knows for sure, or maybe as we move through the this movie, we'll be able to figure it out a little bit better. But my assumption is that. That he is the character known as the delivery boy, but again, I can't say that with 100% certainty from that perspective.
Yeah, I have no idea, and doesn't have any other lines, does he?
I think later on he does, but again, it doesn't matter because that's not gonna, you know, having a line in this movie when you're a hostage isn't really gonna help you. Help people figure out who you are. I mean, there's a lot of these actors, these characters that don't even have any pictures on IMDb, so those are going to be
right.
Really difficult to figure out who they are. So yeah, I'm thinking it's him. And then Blue continues and says, "Move back, please, and sit down." And then we see that there's a little bit of chaos here. You know, first of all, we see that Danny Doyle, the engineer, gives like a big humph, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, these various characters are all starting to move towards the back of the train. And then you know, a woman stands up and goes, "May I say something, please?" And,
Brown shovels her back to with everybody else.
Right. Would you mind letting us know what's happening here? And like, it's a very strange way that you know, these people are talking, because they realize they're here in a place that they're being threatened, but they're expecting answers from, you know, from the terrorists. You know, and listen to me, all I want is, and then Blue says, "Be quiet and sit down." And then Brown grabs her and goes, "Let's go, honey." She says, "Don't touch me." He goes, "Let's go." So, you know, again, I don't know if I mean, I hope never to be in this type of situation, but I don't know if I would be that courageous to start asking, you know, the hijackers, tell me what's your plan? What do you plan on doing here? You know, so it's a little strange that they're having characters. Maybe they're trying to show that this really is a New York atmosphere, that these are New Yorkers who really don't give a crap about anything. And, you know, just want to know the information.
Well, people start barking orders at you on a train like this, and you want to know what the hell is going on. But the fact that they are armed and are pointing their guns in various directions, including in your face, I would probably be a little bit quieter. Yes.
Exactly. Again, it's I see that as being a little bit the less realistic, the fact that they're doing it that way, but who knows? Maybe in the 70s that's the way people reacted, you know, on New York subways.
Well, on the other hand, Blue is asking them to move back, please. So if he's going to use the word please, then maybe politeness is the way to respond. I beg your pardon, but could you explain to us what's going on here? You know, and so maybe she's just simply trying to mirror the behavior that she's getting from the hijackers.
Interesting. I never thought of about it from that perspective. It makes me wonder who this character is. You know, again, there's no way of differentiating her from any of the others here. I mean, you have one that's the maid, you have the secretary, the Spanish woman. Those are the three that that jump out at me that it could be. But there's really no way of knowing who these you know what? Looking on IMDb, there is a picture of the woman who plays the secretary, an actress named Carol Cole, who it's actually very possible that it is her. I'm looking at her face. It's very possible that it is her. So
Well,
it's
I'm assuming the maid was somebody who was in the mayor's mansion, as
oh, that
opposed
could
to
be too.
somebody who was on the train.
That's true. That's true. Right. So Carol Cole was born in 1944, passed away in 2009 at the age of 64. She has only nine IMDb credits, all of them from the late 60s to early 70s. Nothing besides this movie really jumps out from that. And she is actually the daughter, this actress is the daughter of Nat King Cole,
Wow.
the sister of Natalie Cole.
Well, there you go.
So I don't know if it's her, but it looks like her.
That seems like it's likely to be correct.
Because you think that she has a that she resembles Natalie Cole
Yeah.
or Nat King
You know,
Cole?
I think I do see a closer resemblance to Nat King Cole than I had before. When you mentioned that connection, I'm looking at her face and I'm going, oh, I can see that. She looks like she could be related to him.
Okay. I'm okay with that. I'm good with that. Another annoying thing about IMDb is when you have pictures of a lot of cast members, so they will have a list of all the people, but unlike Facebook or something like that, when you put the mouse over the name, it doesn't like highlight the person so that you can tell, oh, that's who we're talking about. You know, the way that modern technology has made things easier for us to figure out. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that this is the secretary. That's going to be my guess at this point.
I think she's dressed a little bit more like a secretary would be dressed. She's also carrying like a notebook or a planner in her arms. So that seems to fit.
Again, that's a fair assessment with that. Brown is pretty rough with her when he's pushing her backwards, you know, trying to get her to join everyone else. And then we're back with Blue, who says to he turns to Doyle and goes, "All right, Mr. Doyle." And Doyle says, "What are you gonna do?" And then we get a little humorous moment along the way. Brown says out loud, he goes, "What about this one?" He points to the drunk lady, who's just lying there on the bench, fast asleep.
Yep.
And Blue looks at him and goes, "Let her sleep."
Probably an easier way to handle it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's a you have okay, so she's the alcoholic, played by an actress named Louise Larrabee, And what's very interesting is that her picture on IMDb is a picture from like the 40s or 30s or something like that. So, she is an actress that was around for quite a while. She was born in 1916 and passed away in 2002, which means that she was 58 when this movie came out. And she has 37 IMDb credits. This is actually her second to last credit, the thing in Problem 123, where she plays the alcoholic. She was in Failsafe. Interesting. Okay. That I see she was mainly in a lot of TV shows over the in the 50s. And she was a bit player in the 30s also. She played like a chorus girl and stuff like that. I mean, looking at the way that her character looks here, you would not believe that she was a chorus girl 40 years earlier. But apparently she was.
Time marches on for all of us.
Yeah, definitely. And so I that's also another thing I like about this movie is it's a very tense story, but every so often they throw out a little bit of humor here and there. Just to lighten things slightly, with the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
Like the scene, like the segment that we're about to have where the woman who is probably a prostitute has an appointment
she's
that
not
she needs to
probably
get to.
that is who she is, and we will get there shortly. And so Blue continues pushing Doyle to the back of the train. He says to him, "What you're going to do, Mr. Doyle, is to go back, collect all the passengers from the nine cars we've cut loose, and you walk them to the 28th Street station." And Doyle looks at him and goes, "I don't know, sir. People hate to get off in the middle of a tunnel." Which is such a great line because, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. You don't expect people to be talking this way. You think that people are going to be a little bit more scared as opposed to speaking their mind in these type of situations. And then Blue says, "Just do as you're told." And he's getting ready to get out of the train. And then, as you mentioned, there's a woman who stands up, and she goes,
Well,
"Excuse
she
me."
puts her hand up like she's in
That's right.
school.
That's right.
Excuse
She's in
me.
school. Right. She is the character who is listed as the prostitute, the hooker,
Right.
Mary Gorman. And she was born on September 1st, 1944. According to IMDb, she's still alive. She has 34 credits on IMDb. Also, most of them TV episodes. She was on St. Elsewhere. She was on ER, Mr. Belvedere. She was in an episode of the Twilight Zone in the 80s. She was in Max Dugan Returns. That's a fun movie, a fun Neil Simon movie. And but most of them were just very bit parts. This is interesting. She was also in the TV show Family. I mean, you know who plays
Yeah, well,
Danny
that's
Doyle.
funny because James Broderick was in Family.
That's right. So and she played a secretary there. So maybe he remembered her and said, "Oh yeah, we were in that movie together a few years ago." "Oh, okay, well, if you were in the movie a few years ago, so why don't we give you a little bit of a part?" Who knows? So she goes, "Excuse me," and she raises her hand and goes, "Excuse me, can I go with him, please? I've got this very important appointment, do you see?" And again, as you mentioned, this is very humorous, knowing that her character is named the Hooker, because the assumption is that the very important appointment has to do with her profession.
Right.
And it's also a ploy of trying to get out of there, obviously.
Of course.
You know, from the same perspective. And Blue gives her a very stern look and goes, "Nobody else leaves." And that's how this minute ends. They do give us a great shot right before the minute ends, where we see just about all the passengers just sitting there on the sitting on the benches with Mr. Brown, you know, guarding them from behind. But it gives us a nice shot of all these different characters, and just to give us a little bit of an idea as to who's who from this whole thing. So I like that.
It does do that.
Yeah. So, Richard, do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
Yeah, I pointed out for myself as they're walking, as Mr. Blue is walking Doyle back through the train car to the backs to give him his assignment. They walk past a poster of Iron Eyes Cody, who was a familiar figure from movies, but especially television, because he was the famous crying Indian in the Make America Beautiful ads. Right. And there's one of those public service ads right behind Doyle as Blue is escorting him down the train car.
Right. Anyone looking for that? It's at the second 25. You can see that.
Yeah. So those of you who are following along, looking at the video of that, you'll see him. And like I said, he was a very familiar character in that time. Later on, there was quite a bit of controversy because although he had portrayed himself as a Native American for years, and it appeared in movies as a Native American Indian, turns out that he wasn't. And he denied that he wasn't. I think it's one of those examples of people self-deluding themselves. He'd been so wrapped up in the identity he created for himself that he forgot his actual origin. He's the son of Sicilian immigrants.
That's right. His name, his real name was Espera Oscar de Corti. He was born in 1904 and passed away in 1999. He lived to the age of 94.
Yeah, but it was just kind of an interesting situation there. And then at the end of the car when they're getting off.
Right. Well, one second before we get there, let's stick with Iron Eyes Cody for a second. So okay. The idea of this campaign was about pollution. Those were the, right. the public service announcements dealing with Keep America Beautiful, things like that.
Yeah.
the fact that he was living in Hollywood basically tells everyone that he's just he was a very good actor from that perspective.
He'd appeared in a couple hundred movies, typically playing an Indian.
Yes.
And I think he got to the point where he believed that he was an Indian. He tried to live that way. He dressed that way. He acted that way. I think he married a Native American woman. So, like I said, maybe a little bit of self-delusion, but sometimes I think we need to let the world have its delusions.
Sure. Right. He was married to an archaeologist named Bertha Parker. Interesting. And they adopted two children that were they told everyone that they were Dakota origins. Interesting.
Maybe they were, maybe they weren't, who knows.
Yeah, and they remained married till 1978 when she passed away. So they were married for 42 years. Wow. Interesting. And he passed away in 1999 from mesothelioma.
Yeah.
And his one of his final quotes was Make me ready to stand before you with clean and straight eyes when life fades as the fading sunset. May our spirits stand before you without shame.
Once again, I think personifying the the personality that he had come to accept as being himself.
Right. He actually has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah. Which, like I said, he was a well-known
actor,
character actor in movies, you know.
Yeah. That's
playing true. Indians.
Mostly, yeah. All right, yes. So continue with...
the other thing I was going to just point out is, as Doyle is leaving the train, going out the back door there, you can see the ads for two different cigarette brands on either side of him on the door. Mm-hmm. And this was just a couple of years after they banned cigarette advertising on television. And, of course, it suddenly became ubiquitous everywhere else as a consequence. And the Cool brand that's advertised there is, was a well-known brand a long time. But the one on the right, Virginia Slims, was basically created in the late 60s to tap into a female market. And I still remember the cigarette jingles from a lot of the TV commercials. You know, most of the people listening aren't going to even remember seeing an ad for cigarettes on television. But, you've come a long way, baby, to get where you've got to today. You've got your own cigarette now, baby. You've come a long, long way.
Oh, wow.
So get yourself a Virginia Slims.
Did you see what ad is in between those two ads?
The one that's overhead, I can't. Yeah. I'm not sure if I can make it out. Let me see if I can make it out. I can't. I don't think I can see it.
It's a Double Mint.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Chewing gum.
Yep.
So, many, many seasons ago, we talked about all the gum from that company. We won't rehash that again.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention here from this minute?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Excellent. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Blues Day Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Robert Shaw performances. I'm assuming I know which one of them that's on your list, but
There aren't going to be a lot of surprises. I think the top three or four are easy to pick out. We'll see how it goes here. Number five, for me, I'm going to have A Man for All Seasons, which was his Academy Award nominated role as Henry the Eighth. Mm-hmm. And he's quite good in that. Number four, I want to say again that we talked about this, or I wrote about it on a show that you were connected to, The Hireling. Was that Acting School 101 that we did that on?
Very possible.
Because it's a very different movie, and it won the award at Cannes, and he was excellent in this film. But it's one that I think you'd find most people have no idea exists. And then right after that, he had that string of fantastic films that everybody's going to remember. The number three on my list is going to be as Doyle Lonergan on from The Sting, where he is the villain and he is clearly just brutal in the way he approaches things. There's some great scenes in that film playing against Paul Newman at the card table, for instance, where he just is seething without being explosive. It's pretty good. And when he does get to a scene where he does explode a little bit, it's all because he's been containing it. He has to let it out a bit. And I thought that was a very good performance. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get away with talking about Robert Shaw without mentioning a James Bond film. So number two is From Rush with Love, where he plays Red Grant. And once again, he's one of the main villains in the film, and the way he stalks Bond on the train is great. There's a terrific sequence when Bond is looking to make a connection, and Grant is already on the train and he's following him from above, and it's practically like he's a ghost haunting Bond. And then when he shows up, and we know that he's the villain, but he's playing it straight like he's another one of the agents assisting Bond. You know, he gives himself away because he orders the wrong wine. And
You always got to make sure
that's
what you're
important.
ordering, what wine you're ordering around Bond.
That's right. You got to get it correct. And then number one is not going to be a surprise at all. It's his role as Quint in Jaws.
Exactly. Not
Maybe
surprising at all
the
either.
best performance by an actor in the 1970s,
That is
you know,
very,
and
very possible. Yep.
he is terrific in that part, and he was well cast, even though he wasn't the first choice, but he was perfect for the film, and what he does with the monologue is just incredible.
Who's the first choice?
Well, there was talk about Lee Marvin at one point, and then there was talk about Robert Ryan as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't see Robert Ryan in that role. But maybe it's because of everything that he did.
Well, I think Ryan was a little too old, and Lee Marvin wanted too much money, I think. I'm trying to remember what the story was on it.
Okay, that's fine. All right, that is a great list. Thank you very much for that. I'm curious if anyone is not going to mention Jaws as their number one performance by
Apparently, so far, that's been number one for everybody.
him. So far, yep. We'll have to
It's
see
pretty
if that
phenomenal.
trend continues. Yes.
Well, if Swashbuckler shows up as number one on anybody's list, you have to let me know.
Okay. I will do that. As number one, or if it even just appears
Number
on
one, yeah, no, it could easily show up on one of these lists because he has a lot of fun in that role. Like I said, I wouldn't have ever put it at number one, but if somebody does, I'd be interested in knowing who.
Okay, no, nobody has put it on their list at all yet. So, no, but we still have a long way to go, so we're good. Right, excellent. So now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So we will spin the wheel and see what movie remake Richard gets this time. If it's going to be something as simple as you had last time. Okay. Interesting. There are three that we're going to mention here. The original was a foreign film that came out in 1954. The first remake was in 1960, and the second remake was in 2016.
All right, so it's Seven Samurai, Magnificent Seven, and the Magnificent Seven.
Exactly. Okay. I didn't even need to give you any type of hints there, so. Okay, so
I'm
we.
hoping I hope I'm not spoiling your game.
No, 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 no. Why are you spoiling it? I think you're doing very well. That's the point here is to have fun with this. So
Okay.
if you can guess it even sooner, you know that works well too. I'm not trying to stump you here. I'm hoping that you will know what it is.
Well, you know, you might have really fun clues to give out that would have been entertaining, and I stepped all over it by jumping in with an answer before you got a chance to give us those fun clues.
I don't mind that at all. That's fine.
Okay.
All right, so Richard, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Richard Kirkham?
Yes, you can find me at kirkhamamovieaday.com on WordPress or kirkhamclass.blogspot.com. That's my personal site where if I see a movie in a theater, I write about it there. I'm a little behind right now, but I will catch up with it eventually. And then, of course, on a weekly basis, you can find me on the Lamcast, which is the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Bloggers. And we have a weekly podcast that has also got a visual version of the podcast that appears on YouTube. And those are easily searchable on any of the podcatchers that you have or on YouTube.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So Until tomorrow, achoo!
Gesundheit.